Hey, everyone. Welcome to a holiday episode of the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. I'm Brian DeNovellis. Happy Hanukkah and Merry Christmas. Hey, all Seton Hall fans wanted for Christmas was a Big East road win. And you can now check it off the box because that road win is hanging in the stockings by the chimney with care. The Pirates have played exactly one Big East road game this season, and already they have more conference road wins than all of last season. This team is different, and so is Hofstra. Speedy Claxton has the Pride turning heads in the ACC. That's right, I said ACC, not the CAA. They are turning heads in the ACC. Why? Because they have wins over Pitt and Syracuse. Speedy Claxton will be my guest on the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. The greatest player in Hofstra basketball history. Man, I'm really looking forward to that one. Hope you stick around for that. We'll also go around the MAC conference. Quinnipiac looking like the best team for sure. After that, throw all the names into a stocking and pick it out because your guess is as good as mine. We will get to all of that in a bit, but first, a thank you to our sponsor, Mike Supo of RE/MAX Revolution. If you're looking to buy, sell, or list a home down the Jersey Shore, we're talking Monmouth, Roshan counties, get in touch with Mike. It's always a good time to talk to him, one of the best real estate agents in New Jersey. Give him a call at 201-988-2577. Tell Mike that Brian sent you from the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. All right, it is my pleasure now to welcome to the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast the head coach of the Hofstra Pride, and for my money, the greatest player in Hofstra history, Speedy Claxton. Coach,
I like that intro, Brian. Appreciate you.
Listen, I call it like it is, Coach, and you know, I want to get to this team, but man, you were so much fun to watch it at Christ the King and then at Hofstra. And I bet you can still ball out there too, huh?
Those are the glory days, man. I wish I could.
You know what? That team with Lamar Odom, I just want to talk about that. What was it like playing in those days in the early 90s with Lamar Odom and those games in New York?
It was fun, but you really didn't think about it until like now. When you look back like this, that's crazy. Like we had, like on my high school team, we had 3 first round NBA draft picks. Like that's almost unheard of. But back then you kind of you're just going with the flow, and you really don't know how good each and every single person is on the team. It's not until you get older and you look back at like, wow, that's okay. This is why we were so good back then.
Right. Well, unless you're Montverde, then you have 6, you know, draft picks, but that's different. It's a different, you know, you guys were all local and
right. Those guys, that's different because those guys are recruited. Like we weren't recruited to Christ the King.
That was the school you probably grew up watching. Yeah. Wanting to go to, right?
That was our school of choice. Like Montverde, they kind of recruit and put their team together. So yeah, they could do that, but we didn't recruit. Like right. I wasn't recruited to Christ the King. That's just somewhere where I wanted to go because they had a basketball, you know, tradition.
Exactly. You saw the tradition they had there. You're like, I want to be a part of that.
Yes.
That's special. So Coach, you're a part of this Hofstra tradition now, you know, as a player and a coach, and the team really made some headlines, you know, nationally in a span of 6 days. You beat Pitt and then Syracuse, 2 old school, former Big East powers, yeah, the ACC. That doesn't happen to too many teams, knocking off those teams in a 6-week span. How did you guys manage to do that?
Yeah, we just believed, you know, and our kids, they go out there and compete no matter who they're going up against, whether Syracuse, you know, Old Westbury, Pitt, Bucknell, doesn't matter who we're faced. We're going to compete and play the same way, regardless of the competitor.
Well, Cruz Davis has really had a special season for you. And, you know, that Pitt game had a career high 36 points, also had 7 assists. You know, what has been the biggest transformation is in his game from last year to this year?
He's been awesome. And I think the biggest thing for him is has been his confidence. He believes that he's the best player on the court. Like last year was the first time in his collegiate career where he was kind of dependent on to for the outcome of the game. So that was a new role for him. And then this was a even newer role because now he's the go-to guy, and he kind of had to grow into that. Like I had to keep constantly telling him, like, "Yo, look to score, look to score, look to score, look to make a play." Like you have to make a play on every catch. It doesn't have to be a play to score, but it has to be a play to maybe score or maybe facilitate. But you have to be aggressive. Like he wasn't aggressive all the time, whereas now he's starting to become more aggressive, more assertive. And he's starting to realize that he's that guy. Like I'm like through 12 games so far this year, I think he's been the best player on the floor every single game.
And he drew the attention there at the end of the game. You're down two to Syracuse. Let's fast forward to the Syracuse game. You know, 6 days after you beat Pitt, you're playing at Syracuse at the Dome, and you're down two late in that game. I think it was 70 to 68, something like that. And he drew a crowd, and he made the right play. German Plotnikov wide open in the corner, take you through that play, and Plotnikov hit the go-ahead three.
And that's what it's all about. Sometimes, like I know when I give Cruz the ball, he's gonna make the right play, whether it's score or pass. But he's gonna make the right decision. That comes with, you know, watching a lot of film and him believing in himself. And I always tell him, just, yo, listen, the ball's gonna be in hands. Just make the right play, whether it is the score or whether it's the pass. Just make the right play. And in that situation, he made the right play. The score was taken away, and he found German on the baseline drift, and that was the right play.
I love what you're saying. Make the right play. You know, he read it. German was the right play. German's got to knock down that shot too, right? Even if he misses
A
it,
lot
it's
of
the
times,
right play.
a lot of times when you draw up a play in a huddle, and you say you give the ball to a specific guy, he thinks that he has to score, like he has to shoot the ball. Like no, you the play is designed for you, but at the end of it, you got to make the right decision.
Okay. Yeah, and he's doing that. And how about this backcourt? Because, you know, you got a veteran like Cruz, and then you bring in a local kid from, you know, Deer Park, about 20 miles outside of Hofstra in Preston Edmead. How much has he impressed you? And how about that combination in the backcourt? Because they're dynamite.
Oh yeah, he impressed me a lot. I didn't. I would lie. I'll be a lying man if I told you I envisioned this.
Okay.
I did not. I thought he would be a good player in time, but I didn't know how hard of a worker he is. Like he's truly one of our hardest workers, even as a freshman. Always one of the first ones in the gym, last ones to leave. Like he's in the gym multiple times a day throughout the day. Like when I tell you he loves basketball, he loves the game. And that's why he's having so much success that he's having. And obviously having someone of Cruz stature to be there to kind of guide him and, you know, showing him how we do things here, that's a plus.
That is a plus. You know, you're going up against Kyan Anthony. Everyone knows who he is, right? The son of Carmelo Anthony at Syracuse. Do you think your guys, Cruz, Preston, whoever it is, when they're going up against a player who has, you know, all these stars and the son of a former star, do you think they have a little chip on their shoulder to say, hey, I can play with this guy too?
Oh, of course, absolutely. You know, like I said, my guys are competitors, so they're gonna compete with the best of them. And I think whenever whenever you put somebody in front of them that's, you know, quote unquote, supposed to be better than them, it raises their level of play. And then that's why, honestly, the old Westbury game was so important to us, you
Okay.
know, because it was in between Pitt and Syracuse. And I kind of couldn't, that could have been a setup game. But I thought my guys approached it the right way and they really were mature about it and really took care of business. And then at that point after the game, I was like, okay, They're serious. They're serious because their approach to, not that we're playing old West, but because they're approached to like, no, we're trying to get better. This is another day for us to improve, and that's why we held them to under 30 points. Like
Fantastic.
that's the first time, since I've been the head coach here that we approached, a non D1 the way we did.
Now, why do you schedule a game like that?
It's a confidence builder.
Mm-hmm.
With the current landscape being the way that it is, you kind of treat it like a practice and get guys some real live game reps that you want to see out there. And that's kind of how we approach those type of games.
Okay, yeah, and in between the gauntlet of the schedule that you played, and listen, coach, it hasn't been all, rainbows and unicorns for this team this year. You've challenged yourself and you've taken some lumps at Iona, close loss to Columbia. You beat a very talented Penn team,
Yeah, those busts. I swear,
Temple.
since I've been an assistant coach here, like those same day bus trips games, we have never played well in. We always get off to a bad start. It's tough because you sit on a bus for an hour and a half, hour and 45 minutes. Then go out there and play. And we've always had bad first halves. That's exactly what happened at Iona this year and at Columbia. Like we had bad first halves because if you look at our second half, we outscored them and we played the right way. We played house of basketball. So I can only imagine if we would have played two halves, like we those would have been two wins for us.
All right, you got to talk to your AD.
Oh, I
Scout
already
out the
have.
hotels. Scout out the hotels and get a hotel the night before, right next to the arena.
Already have. We are on the same page. When we won't be, we will not be doing that again.
I love it. Listen, you got another challenging game coming up on Sunday against Quinnipiac. I mean,
Doesn't stop.
Tom Pokora, coach, that is your former assistant coach at Hofstra. I love that you guys are playing each other and going at it with Quinnipiac.
Yeah, that's my guy, man. TP's the he's the coach that recruited me here to Hofstra, so we have a special relationship.
Yes.
I still talk to him often. We still root for each other. I don't like playing against friends. That's why even when we even playing Syracuse and beating Syracuse, yeah, it was nice, but I beat a friend. So that's like, I didn't want to take too much away from the game.
Okay.
Even last season when we beat Seton Hall, like, yeah, it was a great win, great for the program, but I beat a friend. Like
Yeah.
Shaheen's a childhood friend. So it's tough. So like playing against friends, it's hard because of course you want to win the games, but then you don't want to beat a friend.
I get that. I get that. I don't know what it would be like to coach against, a childhood friend. But that also says a lot to you, whether it's Red Autry, whether it's Coach Tom Pokora, whether it's Shaheen, you've built a lot of relationships in this business. That says a lot about you.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the longer you're in it, I mean, obviously, the more friendships that you're gonna create.
Hey, Coach, I know we have just a couple more minutes and thank you for taking time to come out here. But, in an era of NIL, what is Hofstra's approach to NIL?
It's a different landscape that, when I took the job over, but I mean, you gotta adapt. It's here. Don't see it going anywhere. We just try to recruit the best players that I guess, quote unquote, we can afford.
And how hard is it to retain them, right? Because
It's
everybody is
difficult
going through
because
this.
everybody know that this we've had a lot of success here, especially with our guard. So they look at our program like, all right, well, if Hofstra has a successful guard, we know that they're gonna be a good player. So, they definitely look at our program and see what our players are doing. Because our biggest thing here as we develop our guys. So from their freshman year to their senior year, in the past, our guys have gotten better. So, these high majors, they know that we do a good job of player development. So, gotta have a good year for us. We're probably gonna lose them, and it is what it is. We gotta know we got we know that going into it, so we don't take it too bad, too hard.
Right. And listen, whether it's Aaron Estrada, whether it's Tyler Thomas, whether it's Darlington Dubar, right? I mean,
Yeah,
you're getting
Jaquan
players every
Carlo,
year,
like
and now they're showing
it is
resumes.
what it is. That's actually like our selling point now to young talented freshmen. Like, listen, you come here, develop for 1 or 2 years, and we're gonna put you in a position to make a lot of money for yourself and your family.
That's exactly what Tom Pecora said. That's exactly what Anthony Latina says at Sacred Heart. You have to embrace that, because if
You
you're
gotta
not.
embrace it. It is what it is.
Yeah. Okay, coach, this is deep. You were one of the legendary players at Hofstra, 2,000 career points, right? 4-year player, your numbers up there in the rafter. How different would your career have been if you were in an NIL era? Would you have stayed? What would you have done?
It would have been very different, because I wouldn't have been able to afford to stay at Hofstra. So luckily for me, that the whole NIL landscape wasn't popular back then, because there's no chance, there's no shot that I would stay at Hofstra. I would have left after my sophomore year, because I was player of the year my sophomore year. So I would have easily garnered, whatever it was, 700,000, some million dollars, and there's no way that I would have been able to pass that up, being that the position that my family was in back then.
And you know what? I appreciate the honesty. It would have been UConn, St. John,
Yeah,
Syracuse, Duke. They all would have been
yeah.
after you.
And then I might not have reached legendary status here, and then I might not be sitting here today as being a head coach. One of the biggest reasons why I'm sitting here being a head coach now is because I did legendary stuff here as a player.
Hey, call me old school, call me nostalgic, old fashioned, whatever it is. I think there is so much value to that. But everyone has to do what is right for them and their family.
Yeah.
Well said, coach.
Yep. Thank you.
Thank you, and thanks for the time. Listen, Merry Christmas to you and your family, and good luck the rest of the season in the CAA. It's going to be fun watching Hofstra.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Right back at you. Thanks, Brian.
Man, that was fun. Big thank you to Speedy Claxton. One of the very best players and now coaches in not only the tri-state, but really in the country. This guy can coach, he can recruit, and you heard him. I love it when people are honest. He said it. Hey, if he was playing in an NIL era, there is no doubt things would have been different. But I, for one, am glad that he didn't play in an NIL era, and that we got to enjoy him at Hofstra, and his number is right there in the rafters forever. There is something to that. And I think more and more, when you see in college basketball, listen, guys, I don't fault them for ever getting what they feel like they can get. And if the money's out there, I'd probably do the same thing. But if you can still make money and stay in a place that originally recruited you, and it's a great place to get a great education, and you love your teammates, and you love what's around you, you love everything about that college experience and that college program, then why not stay? Why not stay and become something special, not only with that program, but for yourself individually? I hope more and more players do it. We're seeing Alex Caravan and guys like that do it at UConn. You cannot put a price tag on that. Those experiences, those moments, Speedy Claxton being in the rafters at Hofstra, that is priceless. All right. Speaking of priceless, what a priceless victory for Seton Hall. If you haven't believed in this team before, you better start believing. Hop on the bus. And we're not talking Gus, the Gus bus, because he's playing up in Burlington, Vermont. And oh, by the way, have you seen his stats? I'm very happy, by the way, for Gus Yeldon, because that dude just needed an opportunity in the right place. And he's averaging 18 points a game, and he has the catamounts, at the top of the America East, where they have been for more than a decade. Very happy for the Gus bus, but this is a bus of a different variety. This is a blue bus, and it is streaking towards the NCAA tournament. I get it. They haven't won anything yet, but they have won a Big East road game, and that's more than you can say about this team last year when they won zero. How have they done it? They went into the Amp, they went into the Dunk, into one of the toughest buildings to play in the Big East on a Friday night, sold out in front of Providence, their home opener, and the best defense in the Big East was greater than the best offense in the Big East. Just a masterclass performance by Seton Hall on a night when they didn't have Najai Hines. The leading scorer, AJ Stanton-McCray, was struggling and was benched for ineffectiveness down the stretch of this game, and Seton Hall still won. They won on a night they missed 10 free throws. They won on a night they had 13 turnovers, missed 11 layups, and only six players scored. And they won on the road, like I said, in one of the toughest Big East environments. That's the mark of a really good team. When your best player isn't scoring, and arguably your best big man is down, and Seton Hall faced adversity and they overcame all of that to win a Big East road game. Wow. Providence came in averaging 91.7 points per game, the highest scoring team in the Big East, and the Pirates held them to a season low of 67, to a season low of 40% shooting. They held the Big East leading scorer, Jason Edwards, to a season low 10 points. Edwards was leading the conference at 19 points a game. So this was a total team effort, and this was Seton Hall in a microcosm. They played great defense. They have had nine steals or more in, I think, 13 straight games now. They had 12 more steals. They were doing it with grittiness. They were doing it with toughness. If you looked at Providence, they were exhausted, banged around in this game. This is just old-fashioned Big East hard hat basketball. You know, hats off, hard hats off to let's begin. Let's start handing out hard hats, okay? Stephon Payne, let's begin with him. On a night when he had to be good, he had to stay on the floor, he had to stay out of foul trouble. Why? Because Najai Hines wasn't there. And I do want to say this, Shaheen Holloway was asked about it after the game. Hines was listed on the Big East report as being inactive. And this is what Shaheen said on the radio to Gary Cohen and Dave Popkin after the game. And I'm going to quote, "There's some stuff I'll talk to you guys about at another time. It's nothing major. Hoping he's back next week. Just an illness. I'm sure he'll be fine." Read into it what you want. My interpretation of that is, maybe he was sick, maybe he was not. Maybe there's something more there. Maybe it was a minor infraction, some type of team discipline. All right, it doesn't say that he's injured, so that's good news. Maybe he's sick, maybe he's not. A lot of maybes there, but sounds to me like it's a one game thing. Sounds to me like he could play against Villanova. So we'll see. I'll leave it at that. But not too clear there. You interpret it how you want to interpret it. I can interpret Stephon Payne as being a beast. He was a monster. However you want to describe him, pick your adjective. Beast mode, cooking, eating. He ate. That I can tell you. A season high 18 points, a career high 16 rebounds. Those games don't happen too often. All right. Those are Angel Delgado numbers. This game by Stephon Payne was something that, honestly, I don't think that any Pirate fan could have dreamed that Stephon Payne would play a game like this especially when there's no backup center other than Godswill Arrieta, who gutted out a few minutes, showing the signs of rust, coming off, inactivity for months, a few practices under his belt, and he was really out there and did great. Hats off as well to Godswill Arrieta, but he was there to give Stephon Payne a breather. This is a guy in Stephon Payne who came from Jacksonville. No Seton Hall fan had ever heard of him. He had modest numbers at Jacksonville. He never had a game like this in his life. If you have a game like this in the Atlantic Sun, that's one thing. That's impressive. That's impressive at any level. But to do it in the Big East, in your first ever Big East game at Providence, wow. Wow. He's a guy who averaged 8 points a game in his 2 years at Jacksonville. 8 points, six rebounds. That's what he's averaging this year at Seton Hall. 7.8 points, 6.5 rebounds. His numbers have basically stayed the same. And in this game, they went up, way up. So the first star of the game, Stephon Payne, with just a monster effort. And the two fouls is really key because he was never in foul trouble in this game. The second star of the game is Tawan Simpkins, a season-high 22 points in 30 minutes off the bench, further proof that, as Shaheen Holloway said, it doesn't matter who starts. Whoever's playing the best, Rick Pitino does the same thing. Whoever, it doesn't matter if you start or if you finish, you're going to get your minutes if you're playing well. And Tawan Simpkins, on a night when AJ Staton-McCray didn't have it, on a night when this team was struggling to shoot from the outside, struggling to score points, he was brilliant. He scored as soon as he came off the bench. He scored early and he scored late. And late in this game, Seton Hall down one with a minute to go. Simpkins calmly swishes the three on the wing off a brilliant pass from Bud Clark. So, star of the game, Tawan Simpkins as well. The second star of the game. And the third star of the game, Bud Clark. This guy, every game he becomes better and better. Every game he is learning. He is learning from a master in Shaheen Holloway. He is the perfect player, the perfect point guard at the perfect time for this program when they desperately needed one. He makes all the right reads and he learns from his mistakes too. Final 2 minutes of the game, he wasn't scoring, but he had the ball in his hands and he made the right plays. The first big play, a high pick and roll with Stephon Payne, gets the screen. Payne rolls to the hoop. The pass goes down low. Payne has the mismatch, goes up for the layup, puts Seton Hall up one. Providence responds at the other end. Seton Hall comes down. And again, Payne goes to the free throw line, hits two free throws. But then Bud Clark, the play of the game, the very same high pick and roll, a minute to go, Providence up one, and Payne rolls to the hoop. But this time, three Providence players converge. They were not going to let Payne get the ball in the post. Who's open on the wing? Tawan Simpkins. Clark zips the pass to him across the way. And Simpkins had all day to think about it, and he just had the form and swished it, put Seton Hall up two. So that's the second big play by Clark down the stretch. The third big play, Seton Hall gets a defensive stop. They're up two, under 30 seconds to play, shot clock winding down. Clark gets another screen, and he has a mismatch with the big man for Providence, Arunse, and Clark's like, man, let's see what you got, big fella. And he kind of does a little jab step, pivot, and does a pull-up fadeaway over the shot blocking Arunse, the leading shot blocker in the Big East, and he swished a corner elbow jumper fadeaway from about 14 feet. Put Seton Hall up four, and for all intents and purposes, that was your ball game. He made a free throw down the stretch. So In the final 2:16, he had 2 assists, 3 points, finished with 9 points, 7 assists, 4 steals. He was sloppy with the ball, and I'll get to that in a little bit. Seton Hall needs to get better with the turnovers in a game like this. They got away with it. Why? Because they were grittier, hungrier, and better than Providence. But it was Payne, it was Simpkins, it was Clark. And Seton Hall delivered the pain on the road. Shaheen Holloway is now 3-1 all time as Seton Hall head coach at the AMP. I will repeat that. Shaheen Holloway is 3-1 on Providence's home court. The dunk, the AMP, whatever you want to call it. This dude can coach. Okay. And for all the Seton Hall fans who jumped off the ship and said Shaheen Holloway isn't the guy, a lot of fans, even across the country, were saying, what happened to Shaheen Holloway? This guy can't coach. It's just amazing. It's amazing they forgot what he did at St. Peter's, making that miraculous run that no 15 seed had ever done in the history of the NCAA tournament. It's the same coach then that he is now. It's further proof you need players. Last year, he didn't have the players. Was it his fault? Yes. Didn't mean he couldn't coach. It just showed you he had to grow as a GM. He's grown by leaps and bounds. He's still a great coach. And now the players are buying into him. The players are an extension of him. They feed off of him. They will run through brick walls for him. The same questions keep coming up in press conferences. How does your team do it? How does your team do it? Donnie Marshall after the game, how are you doing it? 10 new guys. They have bought in. There are 200 plus coaches, 300 coaches in this country who are going through the same thing with new players on the roster, overhauled rosters, and they're trying to get players to buy in. Rick Pitino, still trying to get his players to buy in. Kim English cannot get his players to buy in. And those are two right here in the Big East. Shaka Smart can't get his players to buy in. Greg McDermott can't get his players to buy in. Shaheen Holloway has gotten his players to buy in. They play defense, they get after it, they get steals, they get blocks. They are a top 10 scoring defense in the nation. They are a top 10 blocking team in the nation. And they are top 10 in steals in the nation. That is a recipe. Those are ingredients that can make you a top tier team. And now all those people who were wondering if Shaheen Holloway could coach are suddenly saying he is coach of the year. That's what players can do. And that's what players can do for you who buy in. So now Seton Hall is 1-0, 11-1 for the first time since 2011, 2012. And up comes Villanova. Up comes a game on December 23rd. I've said it before. I hate the date, but the date is the date 2 days before Christmas. Pirate fans, Villanova fans should all be there. Because both teams are coming in with juice. Villanova just beat a Wisconsin team in Milwaukee. It was a, 90% Wisconsin fans. And they won a gritty game in overtime. Kevin Willard's team picks up a big quad one win. It's the return of Kevin Willard, a man who has resurrected this program, who, for my money, is the third best coach in Seton Hall history. Right behind PJ and Honey Russell. He did wonders for this program. He is coming back to coach against Shaheen Holloway, who coached under him for nearly a decade. This is a Villanova team who Seton Hall has, let's face it, it's been one of their rivals over the last 8 years or so. And it's been a team who, more often than not, has gotten the better of Seton Hall. If Seton Hall wins this game, they are 2-0 and very much an upper tier team in the Big East and a team that is a top three team. These are likely the two teams who are going to be fighting for that third spot behind UConn and St. John's. All right. This would give Seton Hall the upper hand. Huge game with a lot of implications. Still, a lot of games left. It's not a must win, but it would be another statement win and a feather in Seton Hall's cap, and would give them the leg up on a team that, for the better part of a decade, was the team in the Big East and is now trying to reclaim that status as a top-tier team. Huge, huge game. Tuesday night, 7 o'clock at The Rock. All right, now I want to talk about the MAC. I want to go around the MAC, mostly with our tri-state teams, but where do we stand pre-Christmas in this conference? It is clear Quinnipiac is the best team. They were the best regular season team over the last 2 years. Tom Pecora has the best player in the conference with Amari Monroe, and he might have, a guy in Jaden Zimmerman who, in my opinion, is the second best player in the conference, but is challenging Amari Monroe for conference player of the year. Jaden Zimmerman is a super sophomore, came out of the Bronx, local kid. He leads the team in scoring. You have the best 1-2 punch in the conference with Monroe and Zimmerman. They have beaten Pitt and they have blasted Iona in New Rochelle by 21. They have a road win at Monmouth. They have a great backcourt. Aseem Jones, a senior, Ty Turnage, a freshman. They have inside, outside. Are they beatable? Sure, every team's beatable, especially in the MAC when these coaches all know each other. Tremendous coaches. There are a lot of really good teams in the MAC this year. It is an exciting conference to watch. But right now, Quinnipiac is, I'm not going to say head and shoulders above the rest, but they are ahead above the rest. And of course, props to my guy, Riley Sampson, out of East Catholic High School, leading the nation in 3-point shooting percentage, still at 58%. So keep it up, Riley. All right. Quinnipiac is one. Who's number two? You could throw five names in a hat. Is it Iona? Is it Marist? Is it Siena? Is it Merrimack? Is it Sacred Heart? How about Fairfield? I'm not counting out Fairfield. Before I get to the others, Chris Casey has two really good freshmen in Declan Wutcher-Fennig and Brandon Benjamin, two guys out of Bergen Catholic. They are exciting. Wutcher-Fennig is more of a slasher, a 3-point shooter, and if he can ever develop that 3-point shot and progress, he's going places. I can tell you right now, remember this name, Brandon Benjamin. The last game they played, he picked up a block at about the 3-point line, took the ball, took three dribbles, and jammed it at the other end. It was a SportsCenter top play. I was like, wow, who is this dude? Looked a little more into it. These two freshmen are the second and third leading scorers for Fairfield. They just picked up a massive win at Central Connecticut State, where they just totally smacked the shit out of Central. And Central's a good team, you know that. They were up 31 in this game and just cruised to a victory. So that was a game that turned heads as well. They had two tough games to open MAC play at Manhattan and at Merrimack, but Fairfield's good. Don't discount them. We know Iona's very good. They're the top scoring team in the MAC. They've beaten Hofstra. They've beaten Fordham, Princeton, Oregon State. They won at Sacred Heart. They won on the road at Kansas City. CJ Anthony is right there for Conference Player of the Year, along with Monroe and Zimmerman for my money. If you missed this one, he and Monroe were named to the Lou Henson watch list as the top mid-major player in the country. That guy's he's one of the best stories in college basketball. If you haven't heard, he was a walk-on for 4 years, 4 years at Cincinnati. I believe the number was 55 points that he scored in 4 years. Well, he's averaging 19 points a game this year. I think that's the number. Maybe I'm wrong on that. Maybe it's more like 16, but the bottom line is CJ Anthony has become a great story. He's averaging 16.3 points to be exact. He has become one of the best stories in college basketball, certainly the best story in the MAC. And between him and Lamine Sabally, they have a great 1-2 punch inside and outside. This team shoots threes. Sacred Heart shoots threes. Iona and Quinnipiac, those are the top 3-point shooting teams in the conference. So hats off to Dan Giroux. Iona is going to be right there. Marist is going to be right there. You're talking about one of the best offenses. Now you're talking about one of the best defenses. John Dunn's teams play defense. All right. Year in and year out, they are a great defensive team and they're doing it again. They're a team that beat Dartmouth by 20. They had a nice win at Bryant. So when you play defense, you know me, defense travels. Them, Siena, Marist is 2-0. Siena is 2-0. St. Peter's is 2-0. Bashir Mason has got them. They're getting better and better. Let's just say that. I know they defeated maybe the two worst teams in the conference in Niagara and Canisius, but they won those games on the road and they won them. That's the bottom line. They won them. They had a shot to beat Georgetown. If you didn't hear this, they should have beat Georgetown. They were playing at Little McDonough Arena. An embarrassment for Georgetown was about to happen. I mean, they couldn't even fill the building. It seats 2,000. The students didn't come out. If you didn't hear this, Ed Cooley called out the students after the game. I know they have exams. We held the game on campus for you guys, and you didn't show up. That was his message. So there were empty seats in the house. It would have been one of St. Peter's biggest regular season wins ever. They had the ball in a tie game, and they were an open 3-point shot from stunning Georgetown. Brent Bland had a good look. You have the ball in your leading scorer's hands with an open look at the end of the game. You couldn't ask for more. Instead, it missed. The game went to overtime, and Georgetown prevailed by 8. But still, do you want to play this St. Peter's team? They trap, pressure D. Bryce Eaton is one of the top guards in the league. They have a real nice duo in him and Bland. So Bashir Mason, Kedron Clark and company, look out for St. Peter's. And Sacred Heart is a team that's also, they're a little bit of Jekyll and Hyde. We know they can score. Can they defend? That is the big question. All right, they gave up 100 points. They couldn't stop Central Connecticut, couldn't get a stop ever in that game. And that's one that I know Anthony Latina would like back. So the question is, can they get better defensively? And we've seen it. We've seen them recently. All right, they just beat Dartmouth by 22, and Dartmouth has some dudes. They can score. They might be one of the top four teams in the Ivy League, and Sacred Heart beat them by 22. Mekhi Conner delivered a masterpiece. This kid is such a heady point guard. Had an awful game against UMass Lowell, where he had 8 turnovers. Instead of sulking his head, he came back, worked harder. And in the very next game, a game right after he scored or turned the ball over 8 times, he had a career high 21 points and 10 assists and 7 rebounds and 3 steals, the best game of his young career. The point guard out of Notre Dame, West Haven. They need more of that. They need Mekhi Conner to be a leader. And Deshaun Gittens, the transfer from FIU out of Hartford, Connecticut, also had a career high 26 points, 9 rebounds. So, can Sacred Heart put it together defensively? Listen, I think Marist is going to be there at the end of the year. Can John Dunn finally lead Marist to a MAC championship? Can Tom Pecora finally lead Quinnipiac to a MAC championship? Can Iona, the team that has dominated the MAC more than any other program, the most decorated program, can Dan Giroux, the first-year head coach, bring them back to the promised land? Can Jerry McNamara, the Syracuse great, lead Siena back to prominence in the MAC? It wasn't that long ago that Siena was the top team for so many years under Fran McCaffrey. A lot of great storylines in the MAC this year. It is as wide open as ever. Keep your eye on it. I'll certainly have my eye on it because it's only just getting started. And that'll do it for this episode of the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. Man, if you're not fired up for college basketball this season in the Tri-State, then you need to move. Just go to Florida, go to Arizona, just get out of this state because, hey, there may not be a lot of teams, but there are a lot of teams going to the NCAA tournament. But we've got some surprise teams, and we've got some teams that are worth watching, and certainly some coaches that are worth rooting for as well. You know, I'll have it here. As long as there are games to be played, we will be talking about it right here in the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. I'm going to take about a 7 to 10 day break for the holiday. And on the other side of Christmas, sometime between Christmas and New Year's, I'll be back with another episode. I appreciate you listening. I appreciate you downloading. And please keep sharing the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. My thanks, of course, to Speedy Claxton as well. It was such a pleasure talking with him for the first time, and I hope it won't be the last time that he is on the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. Until next time, Merry Christmas, everyone. Have a great holiday season. I'll see you on the other side. My name is Brian Dean of Ellis. Enjoy the games. So long.